You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Neggebauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everybody. Today is November 9th, 2016, and we are back. It's been a while. I had a baby, and now I'm back. And I'm very happy to be here, and we have an awesome guest today. Monica Wieland is going to be chatting with us about all of the projects that she's been doing over the last year or so, and about a workshop coming up called the CAF Workshop in Friday Harbor. And I do want to talk a little bit about some news. No, I'm not going to talk about the election. I'm going to talk about actually what may be even more sad, the death of J-28 Polaris and her calf, J-54 Dipper. The news was announced a few weeks ago by the Center for Whale Research, and that brings our population of southern resident killer whales down to just 80. And it's really been a wake-up call for a lot of groups, as all of these events are, to do what we can to restore salmon for these killer whales. Over the summer, a lot of naturalists just watched as these two whales got skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. So more information will be coming out about what may have happened with these two whales over the next few months. Hopefully we learn more from these deaths and can figure out what to do to prevent them in the future. One thing that you can do is join us at our Helping Out events. And our next one is on November 19th, and it is with Friends of North Creek Forest, who I just got the news. They, at the Bothell City Council meeting yesterday, have saved the forest. And so all of the land will be turned into a park. And our help is still, though, very much needed to help with the restoration. And it's just great news to hear that this wonderful piece of property was saved from development. So come on out November 19th from 10 to 2. We will have, weather permitting, Mike the life-size inflatable killer whale. We'll have Orca trading cards to pass out to the kids, along with wearable dorsal fins, which we've put on dogs, so dogs are welcome. And again, the event is family friendly, it's free, and it will have free chili. So and last year the cornbread was amazing, so it's a lot of fun hanging out with friends and planting trees. There were a number of Chinook salmon seen in North Creek this year. And so it really is directly doing good for the whales. And I like to just physically get out there and really make a difference for killer whales. And it's so much fun. So please come on out. More information at whalescout.org and on our Facebook page. And another opportunity for volunteering. If you want to be a Whale Scout volunteer and be one of those people out on the beaches helping others watch whales from shore, you are welcome to join us on December 3rd at the Seahurst Park Environmental Science Center for our next volunteer orientation session. And this one I'm really looking forward to. We are going to be joined by Juliana Houghton, and she is a scientist and will be explaining all about the latest research that's going on with these whales to get everyone totally up to date and on the same page. And also for any beginning naturalists, she'll be talking about sort of Orca 101 and marine mammals of the Salish Sea. So even if you are not yet an expert, please come to our volunteer orientation and learn about what we have in our waters and how to best share your information with others. We also have Nicole Killebrew from the Seattle Aquarium, who was with us at our last volunteer orientation, and she was giving communication strategies for collective solutions for environmental problems. So it was great to have her there, and we're having her again. And again, that's December 3rd at the Seahurst Park Environmental Science Center. And you can find more information on our website, whalescout.org. And I encourage you to RSVP ahead of time Just email info@whalescout.org with how many people will be joining us that day. And please go online also and read a little bit about volunteering and what it takes to become a Whale Scout volunteer. And now, without further ado, I'd like to introduce onto our podcast, Monica Wieland. Welcome back to the Whale Scout podcast. And today we are joined by Monica Wieland, who we've had on the show before talking about her blog. And today we are joined by Monica to talk about an upcoming workshop called the CAF Workshop. And I was so excited to hear that you were going to be on. I have a bunch of other questions. You are always doing great things for the whales in a lot of different capacities. I mean, you're a nature writer, photographer, naturalist, and, you know, how did you originally get into studying and loving whales?
Well, I've kind of loved whales all my life, whales and dolphins of all sorts, and it wasn't until I first saw killer whales in the wild on a family trip to Alaska that I was completely hooked on killer whales in particular. And I grew up in Oregon, and when I came home from Alaska, I wanted to know about a place closer to home where I might be able to see killer whales, and that's when I learned about the southern residents. And pretty much in high school, started coming up here and spending the summer up here doing internships and working as a naturalist on a whale watch boat, and have just gotten more and more involved. And it's the whole reason that I moved to San Juan Island, was to stay involved with the whales and in any capacity that I could.
And for your senior thesis, you wrote about killer whales, is that right?
Yeah, so my undergraduate thesis at Reed College was all about killer whale acoustic communication. I had interned through the Whale Museum and out at Limekiln Lighthouse making recordings over the hydrophones of the whales, and then did some analysis on those recordings for my student thesis.
And you also maintain a blog called Orca Watcher. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I originally started the blog when I was working as a whale watch naturalist and going out with so many people and taking a lot of photos that they wanted to see. And it was an easy and convenient way to kind of share that experience after the fact. So I'd post the photos for the people that were out there with me to see the whales. But of course, it's been a great way for people who don't get to come here to connect with the whales. And it's amazing how many people from all over the country follow my blog and Facebook photo posts just because they love the southern residents so much but aren't fortunate enough to be able to be here all the time. So it's kind of just turned into a great way to share my love for the whales and share the experiences that I have with them throughout the season.
And some of your photos you've put together into a book called Orca Encounters, and you've generously donated a couple signed copies of these books for our fundraiser that we have coming up in the next few weeks. And so I wanted to thank you for donating those books. And can you tell people a little bit about the book?
Yeah, you're very welcome for the books. Very much a strong supporter of Whale Scout and what you guys do. All the photos in the book were actually taken pretty early on in my whale watch career. They're all photos from the summers of 2005 and 2006, and pretty much almost all taken from Limekiln State Park on the west side of San Juan Island. So they're almost all shore-based photos. And again, at the time, it was there weren't that many photos out there of the southern residents, and that's changed a lot with social media and everything. But at the time, there wasn't really a book out there with just photos of the southern residents, and so it's kind of filled that niche, and people loved it at the time, and it's pretty cool now because it shows a lot of the whales that we still see today, but at a younger age, a lot of them when they were juveniles. So it came out almost 10 years ago now, but still some of my favorite photos are in that book.
Yeah, I was flipping through it and loving seeing a lot of the really recognizable whales in those photos with other whales that we unfortunately no longer see. So the photos are all beautiful, and I'm glad to hear that a lot of them were taken from shore. And now, one of your more recent endeavors, you've started a group called the Orca Behavior Institute. And can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I've always been attracted to the whales from a photographer's perspective and a naturalist perspective. I love just observing them and being out there and sharing that experience with people. But I've also really had a strong research interest in the whales. Going back to my internship when I started doing acoustic recordings and things like that. But it wasn't really in the cards for me at the time to go to graduate school. I didn't completely identify with some of the research that was going on or the path that it would take for me to be able to participate in that research. So it was something that I got away from for several years. But it took another Reed College student, Michael Weiss, ended up coming up to the San Juan Islands. He was another whale lover. And when the two of us met, he was interning at the Whale Museum at the time, and Cindy Hansen put us in touch with one another since we were both Reedies. And we just really had sort of the same research interests and same passion for the whales, and also just really believe that anyone can do good science, citizen science. So a lot of the amazing research that's happening on the Southern Residents is conservation-based, and that's really, really important, obviously, because they're endangered and we want them to recover. But one of the reasons that we're so passionate about the whales in the first place is because how amazing they are and how complicated their society is. They have their complex, intelligent communication system, yet we understand so little about these things. So we just had a lot of questions kind of from the curiosity standpoint about these whales and what they're doing and why they're doing it. And indirectly, some of those research questions may play into conservation, but they're not really specifically conservation focused. So our approach is a little bit different than the other research that's going on out there.
And so what are some of the research questions that you have?
Well, we're really interested specifically in the social associations and the acoustic behavior. So one thing we've seen over the last 10 years or so is a lot of pods splitting up into different subgroups and mixing and matching with one another. So in the summer of 2015, for instance, we had a specific group of part of J-Pod and one match aligned from K-Pod and L87 that were traveling together throughout most of the summer. And that seemed to be an association for that year, and then not this year. Things changed and they shook it up, and there were different patterns out there of what we were seeing. So it seems like gone are the days of when we just see J-Pod as a whole unit or K-Pod as a whole unit. And every single day out here, it's different in terms of who's here and who's traveling with who. So one of our main interests is just kind of tracking those changes and who's hanging out with who. And then over time, starting to ask the questions about why they're associating in the ways that they are and what might be driving those associations. And then eventually what the consequences of those association changes might be. So we're looking at acoustics as a starting point to see, for example, are the repertoires of the pods or the matrilines changing as they're so drastically changing their social association patterns.
And any ideas what the consequences may be that you can kind of just throw out as guesses at this early stage?
Yeah, well, Michael's undergraduate thesis at Reed used our first year of field data from 2015, and he started asking these questions, of course, off just 1 year of data, so it's very limited, but found some really interesting results that I think will guide our research going forward, is that, for one, they're probably or possibly splitting up because of food or lack of food, but they need to be in smaller groups to be able to take advantage of a more dispersed food resource. But one thing that he found is that the associations that they are forming may be driven by the ability to take most advantage of the food that is out there. For instance, we know that post-reproductive females and adult males play unique and very different roles within resident killer whale society. And Michael's initial proposal that he investigated from our first year of data is that perhaps groups that are missing one of those key social roles, either an adult male or post-reproductive female, may be seeking out to associate with another group that has their missing role. So, for instance, with the J-Pod and K-Pod group that we had during the summer of 2015, it was J2 Granny's group that had the post-reproductive female and the adult male and L87 Onyx, but they were connected with the K14s, which is a group that didn't have a post-reproductive female in their matriline. And looking at the different associations that we saw, there seemed to be potentially some matching up between groups that were missing one of those social roles, filling in kind of that missing role potentially with another matchaline or subgroup, even from a different pod that had that missing link. And Michael's theory that he threw out there was maybe the post-reproductive females have the cultural knowledge in terms of where to travel and where to find food during different seasonal conditions, and the adult males, given their larger size and ability to dive deeper, might be able to take advantage of a different part of the fish population that the females and juveniles can't reach. So that's a very preliminary result that he found in his thesis, but we'll definitely continue to look at that going forward to see if there's some truth to that long term.
That seems to make a lot of sense, and it doesn't seem to be that complicated of a thing to understand and to sort of put yourself in the whale's shoes, so to speak, and see why that would be very important to fill in all those gaps and to sort of make families where you don't have whole families anymore. And I would like
and it's a perfect example of how our research questions kind of start in a non-conservation place. We're just interested in why the whales are choosing to associate with who they're associating with. But it definitely all comes back to conservation eventually. Like, if their changing associations are driven by food and food availability, that's going to affect who they associate with, what their mating opportunities are, their feeding and breeding success long-term, things like that. But it kind of starts with just that kind of question of interest as to what they're doing and why they're doing it.
Right. And now I'd like to shift gears and talk a little bit about the CAF workshop that's coming up. How did these workshops get started, and what does CAF stand for?
So CAF stands for Community Action Look Forward, and it's really a gathering of concerned citizens that it started out because some of us locally in the whale crowd were frustrated that these whales have been on the endangered species list for this long. There's not that many real actions being taken place to help their recovery. There's a lot of great research going on, but we feel that they don't have the time just to continue to be studied. They need real concrete action to be taken. And the reason that these workshops formed was to get all sort of like-minded community members together to talk about actions that we can take as citizens, rather than just waiting around for the governments to take action to help these whales recover. So this is the fourth CAF workshop that we've had. And in previous workshops, a lot of great ideas have come out of the workshops. The Southern Resident Killer Whale Chinook Salmon Initiative is a group that formed because of the CAF workshop and really linked up with the dam removal efforts on the Snake River. And there's been lots of other ideas in terms of how to educate people, what research gaps need to be filled in, and what actions we can take as citizens to help these whales recover.
And so I want to throw out some details here, and please correct me if I'm wrong. It's November 13th in Friday Harbor at the Grange Hall.
That's correct.
It starts at 10 a.m. and donations are accepted. However, the event is free.
That's correct, yeah. And I think we originally put the event was going to go until about 4 o'clock, but we ended up just having a jam-packed day. We have some great speakers and events lined up. So it's probably going to go to closer to 5. So for people who are just coming over to San Juan Island for the day, we're really encouraging them to take the 6 o'clock ferry rather than the 4:15 so they can be there for the whole day.
And what is the focus of this workshop?
So the focus of the fourth CAF workshop is on the two rivers that supply the salmon that the southern residents primarily rely on, so the Columbia River Basin and the Fraser River Basin. And for the Columbia River, there's been a lot of attention on the Snake River dams in particular, but there's a lot of other issues affecting salmon on the Columbia River, and there's been a long and complicated history of salmon recovery efforts on the Columbia River. So we have a couple speakers lined up to kind of give us a background on what all the issues are on the Columbia River and what restoration efforts have happened. And the government, it has been mandated to come up with a recovery plan four salmon on the Columbia River because they're listed as endangered, but those recovery plans keep being found inadequate in the courts. And the most recent one just happened within the last year. So there's another public comment period that's starting and ongoing right now, where the public can provide input to the government on what the salmon recovery plan should look like and should include. So one of the main focuses of this workshop is to give people the background on that whole process and what's going on with the salmon on the Columbia River. And then one of our main actions will be brainstorming ideas of how we can participate in that public feedback process and generate a lot of comments to make sure for the first time that the southern residents are considered as part of that recovery plan, because they haven't been in the past. And then in terms of the Fraser River, there's another group, community group that's formed, primarily headed up by the Raincoast Foundation in Canada, that's focusing on similar issues on the Fraser River and what's going on there. So we have a representative from that group coming to fill us in on what their community group has been doing and how we can be involved with them as U.S. citizens while they're fighting similar battles in Canada.
And are you able to share who these speakers are?
Yes. So we have Michael O'Leary, who's coming to give a background on the salmon issues on the Columbia River. We have Julia Stefani from the National Resources Defense Council, who's going to talk about the current NEPA process, which is the public comment period that's going on for the current salmon recovery plan. And then Misty is the representative from the Raincoast Foundation. Her name escapes me right now, but she's coming over from Canada. And then we also have a couple representatives from the Samish Nation who will be doing a tribute to J-14 and J-28 and J-54, who we just lost over the last few months. So that'll be the probably pretty emotional kickoff to start the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you recommend this to naturalists, or who should go?
It's really geared towards any member of the whale community who's concerned and wants to get involved to help the recovery of these whales. So the idea is that this is open to everyone. There's other groups out there fighting different fights, and sometimes there's some divisiveness among the whale community. And the CAF workshop was really formed to kind of supersede all that. And we really want to bring together everyone from the whale watch industry, the shore-based whale watchers, the research community, salmon recovery folks, whale advocates, just anyone who wants to help southern residents recover is who this workshop is meant for.
And I know I like to do this. Is there anything that you can recommend people read ahead of time to sort of prepare, or should they not?
That's a good question. For this workshop, we're really focused on providing some of that background information. I know personally I've tried to do some research on the Columbia River and what's gone on with salmon recovery there, and it's amazing, just convoluted, complicated history. So it's been a difficult topic for individuals to research on their own, and that's one of the motivations for this workshop is to kind of bring in some experts who do this for a living and have them explain to us what's really gone on. So hopefully this workshop will provide some of that background information for people, and I can't think of anything in particular that would be helpful to read ahead of time.
Well, I'm so glad that you're doing this workshop and you're taking this angle on it. I think all citizens in the whale community agree that it's so important to recover salmon for our killer whales. And so I can't thank you enough for putting on this workshop. And I want to remind everyone that there are public meetings all over the region. And there's one in particular in Seattle that I know a lot of people are local to Seattle and want to be sure that everyone makes their voice heard to protect these salmon for killer whales.
Yeah, the meeting in Seattle is coming up on December 1st, I believe it is, and mm-hmm. one of our kind of breakout brainstorming groups at this session will likely be focused on that meeting. There's a killer whale rally planned to happen simultaneously with that to make sure that there's some media attention on the killer whales, particularly at the Seattle meeting. So more details about that will be discussed at the workshop, and then I'm sure will be pretty widely publicized on social media after the workshop leading up to that meeting. So for even people that can't attend the CAF workshop but can maybe be there in Seattle on December 1st, there will be announcements on social media about how to participate in that and hook up with the whale community in those efforts.
Well, thank you, Monica. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us before we wrap it up?
I just want to say that the CAF workshop is really a community-oriented event, and it's put on just by members of the community that have come together, donated their time to put this together. And it's a great event, and we're really happy to be in our fourth one here and just continue focusing on the positive and what we can all do to head in the right direction.
Thank you so much, Monica. And again, November 13th in Friday Harbor. And you can find more details about the CAF workshop on our Facebook page and at whalescout.org. Again, thank you so much. And we hope to talk to you again very soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Monica. And just a few details to remind you of as we wrap it up here. November 19th, please join us with Friends of North Creek Forest in Bothell. Do your part to help save whales and have a lot of fun doing it. We'll be planting trees and helping restore the diversity of this, what is Bothell's last great urban forest. It's a really beautiful spot, and these events are really fun, and they make free chili lunch. I mean, it's just, again, I can't say how much fun it is. More information about that at whalescout.org and on our Facebook page. And lastly, if you are interested in becoming a Whale Scout volunteer out on the beaches helping others watch whales from shore, I encourage you all to come join us for our volunteer orientation December 3rd at the Seahurst Park Environmental Science Center. And we will be sharing with you everything you need to know to be a Whale Scout volunteer and how to best communicate a lot of these complex issues and to really encourage others to become involved with restoring salmon habitat with us and at home in their everyday lives. So thank you for listening, and we will talk to you again very soon. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information.